If you just let me know when the recording is going.
We are starting the ATR 2 face-to-face meeting from the sessions going from 10:55 until 1:30.
Thank you very much. This is Brian Cute, ATR 2 reconvening. Right now we're in the process of going through the public comments received, the summary of those public comments, and identifying any comments or questions we want to bring back to the community in our interactions this week. We have until 11:45 for this task, when we'll be joined by Tarek Kamel, Senior Advisor to ICANN's President and CEO, to discuss ICANN's governmental engagement. So let's continue. We left off at question 14. The question 14 to the community was, how do you embrace, support, or accept the decisions of the ICANN board? For example, do you embrace the decisions of the board after an internal review of it in your community and or working group? Have you asked for a review of a board decision? If yes, which ones? And again, Alice, we need to get the comments up on the screen if we can. And does, if not, do folks have them on their machine in front of them? If you can look at the comment summary. Do we have any reactions, any questions coming out of this to bring back to the community? David.
I know that a theme amongst many of the comments has been related to the handling of the TMCH issue. This was raised in on this question as well. You know, perhaps that is a topic that we might need to explore specifically. I don't have a strong enough opinion about it.
Am I correct, Michael, that the TMCH was one of the topics that the registries pointed to earlier? I think that's one we're going to pick up specifically in that context. And perhaps we can bring it out to NCUC too as well, David, for follow-up. Right, can we capture that, Alan? Any other comments on the comments to question 14? Avery.
Yeah, perhaps it's just my own baggage in reading it, but I tend to read it as generally a pretty hopeless situation, that why bother trying to, I mean, the board decision gets made. We know that there's never been a reconsideration, you know, for the NCSG, the group I come out of. Once it was important enough for us to go tilt at the windmill, and, you know, we're going to continue tilting at the windmill as much as we can. But I think that, the answers show you that there's really no feeling that there's anything that can be done about it. And perhaps that is significant in terms of it, what it says about, you know, the accountability of it all, is that what could you do? You know, it really is like bashing your head into a wall. And I think the fact that, you know, it's something we carp about very much. You see a lot of, you know, carping about board decisions. But whenever there's a conversation of what are you going to do about it, is what are you going to do about it? And, you know, as I said, the NCSG tried once. We knew it's tilting at windmills, but we felt it was important enough to tilt at this particular windmill. And we'll continue trying to do so. I don't know how we'll raise $1 million, but, you know, continue to do so.
Thank you. Other comments? Okay, moving on to question 15. Was there a specific question coming out of that, just to check again before we move on? covering.
Yeah, I think the question that's worth asking is, you say that you don't do a review. Why don't you do a review? I'm speculating it's because it's hopeless. Why bother? But I might be wrong. You know, they might not do a review because of other reasons. So I think it's worth asking. For all the people that said no review of board decisions is done, well, why not? We know that we all complain about them. Is that sufficient? Not always. Correction. I got a look that told me my all and always was suspect. But you know, we certainly hear enough complaining in the hallways, and yet there is no review, no discussion. Why is that? I think would be the follow-up question.
Alan?
You know, I'll phrase it a different way. I think the same thing, though, of if everyone's unhappy, what should the situation be which would make you happier? You know, is there a way to fix this?
Thank you. Moving on to question 15. The question is, please provide your assessment of whether the policy development process in ICANN facilitates enhanced cross-community deliberations and effective and timely policy development as specified in the affirmation 9.1E. Can you identify a specific example or examples when the policymaking process in ICANN did or did not facilitate cross-community deliberations or result in effective and timely policy development? Are there issues related to this provision you believe should be addressed or investigated by ATRT2? If so, please provide specific information and suggestions for improving the policy development process to facilitate cross-community deliberations and effective and timely policy development. And we have the comments up on the screen. Any comments here on the responses? Again, the focus is cross-community functionality and timely policy development. Carlos, is your hand up?
Yes, Carlos, for the record, I certainly think this should be in the agenda with the GAC. I don't know how many comments have been made to the policy versus implementation paper, but we should take a feeling there. I haven't revised that paper lately. I don't know if it's stock or if staff can tell us about that process. Is the policy versus implementation paper still being developed? Are they processing the comments? Is something new going to happen there?
This is Denise Michelle. So it's an active ongoing issue that's being addressed both within the GNSO, yeah, and staff is also working on it. We can get an update for you from Marika Koenig, who I think is scheduled to talk to this group tomorrow.
We'll put that question to Marika, Carlos. I think we see her tomorrow. Any other specific questions coming out of this to bring to the community this week? Alan.
In this particular one, I don't think here the focus is the GAC. I think the question is there representation, active representation, in ICANN to represent all of the necessary interests in any given subject? You know, the people who are here may well participate. The people who aren't here don't. And representing the interests of all stakeholders may well mean that we're talking about people who aren't even part of the discussion, aren't in the room. And how do we attract those? How do we attract those who don't have a financial stake to be there? So I think the question is wider than just the GAC.
Thank you. Anything else on this before we move on to 16? Okay, question 16 is, please provide your assessment of ICANN staff adherence to the policy decisions of the ICANN policy development process in its operational activities. Please indicate the level to which ICANN staff has been accountable to the ICANN community in its activities. Can you give examples of where ICANN staff has restricted its decision-making to the boundaries set by the PDP or gone beyond those boundaries to either make new policy or replace existing policy without community development process or consultation? Are there specific accountability issues the ATRT2 should explore relating to ICANN staff's interactions with the community policy development process? And Alice, if you could get that summary up on the screen for us. Thank you. Any comments and reaction to what's been provided? Alan.
I suspect we have a problem with this question in that we phrased it a few months ago and the world has changed since then. The recent Board Governance Committee decision, the rejected one from the NCSG, pointed out in very clear language that there are decisions that get made during the implementation phase. It's not only during the policy phase. And there needs to be community involvement. So I think by saying the policy during the policy development process here, we restricted the answers. And I think we need to be careful not to do that going forward. The real question is are decisions affecting people being made during policy or implementation processes where there isn't sufficient involvement of the community? It's a bit late, I understand, to change it, but I don't think we can ignore it.
Thank you. Based on the comments provided in response to the question that was posed, anything to take to the community specifically in terms of a focused question? Not seeing any hands. Let's see. Okay, I think we're moving on to security, stability, and resiliency. Or did I miss one? I think that's next. Starting out with question one under that heading. Please indicate the level to which the ICANN board and staff have effectively, transparently, and fully implemented the recommendations of the SSRRT. Please provide specific information as to why you believe the recommendations have or have not been effectively, transparently, and fully implemented. What metrics do you believe would be appropriate to measure effectiveness, transparency, and completeness of implementation? Comments are up on the board. Any reactions? Follow-on focused questions to bring back to the community. Not seeing any hands. Move on to question two. Please indicate the level to which the implementation of the SSRRT... Yes, Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. It's Olivier. Just one person asked, what is the SSRRT? And perhaps we should remember not to use acronyms in our questions in the future.
Thank you, Olivier. Point taken. Michael?
I had the same question as Olivia. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Question two. Please indicate the level to which the implementation of the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team recommendations has resulted in the desired improvements in ICANN. Please provide specific information as to why you believe the recommendations have or have not resulted in improvements. What metrics do you believe would be appropriate to measure the improvements? Comments are up on the board. Any reactions there? Again, specific questions to take back to the community or not. David.
One of the things I've noticed both in this context and also in the context of the SSR review is a almost monomaniacal focus on DNS as opposed to other aspects of security, stability, resiliency. It may One possible question that we could ask is whether the community feels that there are other aspects of security, stability, resiliency that ICANN needs to look at. For example, SSR in relation to addressing, perhaps.
David, if you just want to recap that one more time for Alice, she's capturing the questions.
Sure. I guess whether or not other aspects of SSR, security, stability, resiliency, outside of that specifically related to DNS, are issues that the community has concerns about.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, moving forward. Now we're looking at the questions on the Who Is Policy Review Team. And question one was, please indicate the level to which the ICANN board and staff have effectively, transparently, and fully implemented the recommendations of the Who Is Review Team. Please provide specific information as to why you believe the recommendations have or have not been effectively, transparently, and fully implemented. What metrics do you believe would be appropriate to measure effectiveness, transparency, and completeness of recommendation implementation? And we have a number of comments that will be up on the board momentarily. The comments, yeah, Michael.
Michael Yakushev is speaking. So this question, as is the same as the next one, shows fairly low scaling, which to my mind shows that the problem is really serious and it's not fully addressed. Then the overall answers, they do support what was done after the recommendations of Who Is Review Team were published. However, there is an evident lack of both theoretical and organizational leadership, what should be done with Who Is based on the recommendations of Who Is Team or ignoring such recommendations. Partly it's mentioned in the responses of Chinese committee, CONAC, where they suggest a certain classification of domain names, just maybe to make it more practical for the implementation of Who Is procedures. So it seems to me that the low scaling of the responses to this question shows that there is something that there is a room for improvement, which was mentioned by those who sent the comments. However, from the formal point of view, at least part of the recommendations, they were really implemented or at least reported by the ICANN board and staff. So I think we should pay again some additional attention to this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is there a particular audience to whom you think this question or follow-up is best suited, or is this an across-the-board follow-up question from the review team?
Well, it's difficult to answer. A lot of people have different opinion of this on this, so frankly, I think we need to discuss it once again with the people within the ICANN staff who are responsible for the implementation. After that, it will be more clear how to go further.
Thank you. Any other comment on this? Alan.
Yeah, I think this is one of the ones that we we have already asked, are there any comments on the other review teams? If people are interested, and I suspect there may be a few groups who will raise it on their own, that will be enough impetus. I don't think we need to ask any specific questions.
Okay, so follow up with the staff directly on this, per Michael's recommendation. Okay.
It's already in progress.
Okay. Any other points? Moving on to question two. Or actually the next section, which is improving accountability and transparency. Question number one, how do you evaluate overall accountability and transparency of the ICANN processes? How would you rate the participation of the community in accountability and transparency issues? Are there other issues that should be addressed or investigated by the ATRT2 consistent with its mandate? If so, please provide specific and detailed descriptions of any such issues along with an explanation as to why such issues should be addressed by ATRT2. Comments are up on the board. Any specific reactions? Any follow-on questions? Not seeing any hands, we can move to question two. Question two, are there any questions we should be asking consistent with the mandate of the ATRT? What are those questions? How would you answer those questions? We have a number of comments here. Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. It's Olivier for the transcript. Just noticing that some parts of ICANN responded in as part of their SO or AC, perhaps asking those parts of ICANN responding to expand on their response would be one additional question we might ask when we meet with them. I note, for example, in question one, improving accountability and transparency, there is the registry stakeholder group, there's the BC. Their responses are quite clear, but they might wish to drive their point a little further.
Thank you. Michael?
Michael Yakushev, there is an evident interest towards the financial aspects of what happens with the new utilities. And there is a recommendation for our group to just address the issue and formulate recommendations to assist the board to handle any profits consistently with the non-profit status of ICANN and further. So I think that in principle we can study all such comments one by one in our group, just to understand whether it's relevant, whether it corresponds to the mandate of the ATRT, to just to avoid any further discussions whether we do right job or not. But I think we should discuss such kind of comments one by one. Maybe not now, maybe later today or tomorrow, but I think it's needed to understand properly what exactly is missing in what we are doing.
Thank you. Let me try to square your comments with Olivier's. Olivier's suggestion is that where an AC or an SO made a specific suggestion of an issue we should look at to give them an invitation to expand on their rationale and make their case for that. Are you comfortable with that suggestion, which is on the table, but you would take the financial question off into a work stream discussion or a group discussion, just so I can square the two?
I meant group discussion.
Okay. Thank you for that. Hold that thought. Any other reactions to these comments? So, Michael, would you like to have an open discussion about the question of how ICANN handles its finances in terms of new potential new recommendations or accountability and transparency issues? What were your thoughts?
Well, to start with, I'm not sure that from the very beginning the investigation of such issue was part of the mandate of ATRT according to AOC, because it was not foreseen in the moment when the AOC was signed. However, the question really raises a lot of questions and a lot of concerns within the communities, and there is, I think, it requires a lot of efforts and some resources from the legal point of view, from checking whether it's whether it could be a good example, a case study, where we give certain recommendations for a very important issue, a financial one, and the recommendations that will be related with our vision of the process would be a good guidance on how transparent and accountable the process should be. I'm not sure that we are able to do it in the remaining months. Maybe yes and maybe no. However, we will need an involvement of all the interested parties, including within ICANN staff and outside from the concerned groups. For example, I would be ready to participate in this part of the process. This is one point. The second point, again, I'm not sure that the placing of certain resources to this specific issue will not distract our attention from other issues that are fully within the mandate and which we have already started to discuss. Under these circumstances, we need to have a good explanations, a good just arguments in discussions with people who would like us to be involved, why we are not prepared or we are not authorized to do so. So, frankly, I don't have an answer. I'm ready to participate, but I'm also ready to explain why we should not do this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I think this is a conversation worth having now. This is the question of other new issues we should look at. There's a number of commenters who said we should look at the finances. We have discussed this. I think Michael's accurate, if I recall, that we felt it was outside or slightly outside our mandate, however you characterize it. Opening the table, the issue of finances as a new issue for us to focus on. I don't know if any of the four work streams in their regular work have surfaced this or incorporated it or not. If they haven't, that would be important to know. Open question, is this an issue we pursue or not? If not, Michael's also correct, we have to have a clear rationale to communicate. Alan?
I'm not sure where this fits. My gut feeling is this is the kind of thing that we need to make an observation for, but not necessarily a formal recommendation. And you know, I'm not sure that's one of the outcomes that we've envisioned in our report. You know, the example is there has been much talk within ICANN about what to do with the windfall profits that may come from auctions. We have not resolved it formally. We are still talking about the existence of auctions, and they get mentioned. We don't know whether any money will come out of it or not. But should a bunch of money come out of it, it's not clear to me. It may be clear to our members of the board what ICANN is going to do with it, and that is a transparency issue. It's certainly been an issue that has been relevant to some parts of the community for quite a while, and the lack of known direction sends a message. And
thank you. Steve?
So, just on this last point, Alan, I've been pretty forceful on this point. And my position has been, and I've been stated it repeatedly in various public settings, that any surplus that comes out of the GTLD program, whether it's a surplus from the revenues from the application fees or from auctions, and I know some people make sharp distinctions between those, but from my point of view, even if you make distinctions, what I'm about to say applies to both, will be accounted for very carefully and segregated out, not just lumped in with the general operating budget. And that's point one. And point two is that the disposition of those surpluses, should they exist, will go through a separate process. Nobody, in my view, has first dibs on it or a natural claim on it. There's a in my mind's eye, a kind of unending stream of applicants, supplicants, petitioners waiting for some disposition of those funds. I have myself some question as to how much money it will actually materialize out of all of this. Internally, we're putting considerable amount of attention on trying to get the finances documented in a way that makes these questions very, very clear. That is, how much money is currently unspent, how much money is anticipated will be unspent from the regular program. And I haven't seen anything on auctions. The formal posture with respect to auctions has really been, we'll run auctions if necessary. Why don't you guys sort it out ahead of time? And since we took that position early on, third parties have shown up saying, hey, why don't we run auctions and give some of the proceeds back to the losers? That would be better. And some of that has happened. I haven't followed the details closely, but I know that those auctions have been held. So there's been no revenue to ICANN due to that, because they've been siphoned off into outside of ICANN. There was one other small detail that was, getting back, and this isn't on the auctions, but getting back to the revenue that has come in from the GTLD program, if one looks at those finances, at the revenue and expenses and projections and so forth, you can't help but notice a fairly large amount of money that is set aside as a reserve against risk. Roughly a third of the revenue in round numbers has been set aside for that. And so then you try to probe into that and say, well, what risks are we talking about? When will they be resolved and so forth? And that is not yet very well documented and understood, and that's getting a fair amount of attention. There is no approved standard methodology for dealing with some of these things. Some of these just play out over a period of time. And so the parts that you can control are transparency and accountability. The parts that are hard to control are reaching a state of further knowledge than you have now. You sort of have to wait for things to play out. A lot of the risk, maybe the only important element that people focus on, is litigation. So if you take a hard position and say, well, tell us how much litigation there's going to be and what the damage is going to be, and then the conversation comes to a kind of a trails off at that point until we see what the results are.
Thank you. So picking up on Alan's suggestion, I want to ask a question that we're going to ask this question again before these 2 days are over. Specific to the financial question, do we envision a recommendation coming out of this review team? Or do we view, as Alan suggested, touching on this issue in the context of our report observationally? Alan?
I think my general comment that we may want a section on observation stands. If what Steve just said is said in a public, well findable place, we don't have to make that observation because it won't be necessary anymore. But I think the concept still applies. Whether we need to do it
on this particular subject remains to be seen.
Thank you. And I'm interpreting the non-reaction as to not in favor of a recommendation or inclined to a recommendation at this point in time. Okay. Moving on. Question. Okay, we're now on the section titled Affirmation of Commitments Reviews. Question number one. Please rate the effectiveness and efficiency of the Affirmation of Commitment Review Team processes. Please provide specific information as to why you believe the Affirmation Review Team process have or have not been effective and efficient. What metrics do you believe would be appropriate to measure ATRT effectiveness and or efficiency? It's about the process. The comments are up on the board. There's earlier criticism of this process creating too much bureaucracy and complexity. There are other comments that note some improvement in some places. Any specific questions arising from these comments that we bring back to the community this week or not, and not as a fine answer? Larry.
I do think this question about the timeliness of implementation is an important issue that we all need to understand. There may be good reasons for it, but the idea of a presumption of timely implementation I think is important, with the idea that there may be reasons you couldn't do it, but we ought to understand that and really validate that if that in fact was the case. But the idea of kind of setting some presumption or some standard going forward as to how quickly things ought to be implemented, I think is still a good one for us in terms of giving guidance for future review teams. And then understanding what, if to the extent it didn't happen, what those reasons were, and are those things that can be fixed going forward.
Point taken. Is that a question to bring back to the community, or is that just an area we need to continue to plumb in our analysis?
Well, I think we've explored it some with respect to the discussions with staff and such. I don't know if we've asked the board point blank about their views of timeliness or what they felt they ran into. I think we heard from both Steve and Foddy at our first meeting about the implementability of decisions or recommendations, so we know that's an issue people have raised. Not sure where specifically it came into play, but I look at the fact that I think we're only in the last couple of months have we actually now gotten the board GAC process put to paper, and I think understanding why that took 3 years is important in order to help us in terms of making recommendations going forward. What, you know, what was the root cause of that, and is it unique to that particular topic, or is it reflective of a problem that needs to be solved going forward?
So that question specifically for the board interaction this week. Okay, full board interaction. Thank you. Timeliness of implementation for the board. We'll craft this again. Alan, Avery, and Lisa and myself, when she's here, we'll polish these questions up and organize them per audience. Any other takeaways on this? Okay, seeing no hands, moving to question two. Have you/your community had sufficient time to review their recommendations and ICANN's implementation of the recommendations? If not, how much time do you believe is necessary? Okay, comments are on the board. At least two are suggesting 4 weeks or more are needed. Any follow-on specific questions for the community coming out of this set of comments? Not seeing any hands. Alan?
There are several answers here, 4 weeks or more needed. And to be honest, I'm not sure I understand the relevance to the question. Does someone else? I mean, are they saying we want 4-week public comment periods? Which isn't, I don't think, was the question we were asking. but there were several references to 4 weeks or more needed. Maybe the full question or full answer would have made that clearer, but it's not to me from, clear to me from the summary nor to my memory. Can anyone help?
Not sure I can.
It was obvious to several independent answerers, so that's why I'm asking, does anyone here understand it?
I'm not sure, Alan. Okay. Any other comments on that last question? Or we've come to the end there. There is a set of general comments at the end of the document that we should take a look at. Can you pull that up? It's the general comments section at the end. Thank you. Alan.
I have no explicit comments, but I think we're going to need, or at least delegate to somebody, the need to go through these and decide or recommend to what extent they are within our mandate or not, because some of them are, some of them are not, and I think we need to at least have some clarity on that. And in one case, it's from ALAC people, so I'm well aware of it, It may well intersect with our mandate, but not completely. But since people have taken the trouble to identify these things, not just answering a question, but coming up with specific comments, I think these we owe a sense of responsibility to at least look at them carefully, more so than we're likely to in this forum in the next few minutes.
Thanks. Well, actually, my view is that these general comments, in addition to the comments responsive to the questions, should become part of the work streams or the relevant work streams work, so that in looking at all these comments, members of the relevant work streams should identify which ones apply in substance to their work, read them in full, assess them as a work stream together, and factor them into their conclusions and outputs. To the extent that any comment doesn't map to a work stream, then the review team as a whole has that responsibility that you mentioned.
As long as we make sure to track that.
Any other comments on the general comments? Okay, seeing none, we have a draft list of questions. Again, the chair and vice chairs will take those offline, scrub them, identify the group to whom they're going to be posed as part of our interactions, put them back up on the screen when we have our preparation session for interactions with the community this week. And what we need to think through again, once we get to that point, we've got the clean questions, they're organized as to who we're going to pose them. We need to think through the dynamics of the interaction, how much time we have, and make sure that we're efficient in getting good, full responses from the folks we're meeting with. Anything else before we move on to the next topic? Okay, seeing no hands. With the altered agenda, We now have an hour and 15 minutes. Is that right, before Tarek joins us? Or is it 15 minutes before Tarek joins? 15 minutes? Okay. Well, we could start the report of the work streams with the 15 minutes that we have, if there's no disagreement.
How long is the metrics discussion going to
take? How long would metrics be? 15 minutes? Are you prepared to walk us through your slides? Okay. Based on the way we've redone the agenda, Larissa, will we have time to get to the workstream reports today? Now let's just take that as a...
2 o'clock, perhaps? Analysis of data collection and next steps, that would probably be a good time.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, so the next item is going to be what was item 7 on the agenda, discuss metrics and benchmarks with Denise Michel and Larissa Gernick.
This is Larissa Gernick, and the purpose of the next presentation is to give you all an update of the work that we've been doing towards establishing benchmarks and metrics. So next slide, please. So the agenda includes giving you a project description, the approach that we're considering, what we've identified as critical success factors, expected deliverables from this project. We'll give you an update of where we are at this particular moment, and then we'll talk about a timeline. Next slide, please. Okay, so for project description, the purpose of this is to implement a mechanism for measuring ICANN's performance in the area of accountability and transparency relative to other international not-for-profit organizations. That's part one. Part two is to track and report ICANN's performance over time so that then we could make informed decisions about improving accountability and transparency on a continuous basis. Slide, please. As we're formulating the scope of work in this area, some of the key questions that have been identified are the ones that you see on the screen. How do we measure how we're doing in terms of our commitment to be transparent and accountable? What key metrics should be used to track progress over time? How do we compare to other similar organizations? And, of course, what are some of the other similar organizations implicit in that question? And then what are the best practices that others use to measure, track, and report this information to a multidimensional community of stakeholders? Next slide, please. Our approach is to engage a consultant with appropriate expertise to lead this effort, and we've defined phase one as the following items. We will identify a peer group for benchmarking, work with a consultant in doing all these steps, identify initial set of metrics, propose a framework for measuring this effort on an ongoing basis, engage with community staff and board to present this information and have a discussion, as well as develop an implementation plan for how to move this forward. Next slide, please. Some of the critical success factors that we've identified: the metrics must be clear, concise, and readily available in order for them to be measurable. We need to address key tenets of the affirmation of commitments while also considering how these benchmarks and best practices are how we compare to other organizations in terms of benchmarking this effort. It's going to be critical to have community understanding and ability to easily track progress. So clarity, simplicity, and ability to communicate this information is very important. And the whole process needs to be nimble and efficient mechanism for measuring, tracking, and reporting, so that our plan will be to institutionalize this effort within ICANN and the community. Next slide, please. Our deliverables expected from this process are as follows: identification of accountability and transparency benchmarks and metrics, definition of a peer group and high-level benchmarks from the peer group, methodology for calculating and tracking benchmarks and metrics, how often will this effort take place, what the methodology will be for getting this information from other organizations, as well as our own performance. And then a roadmap for implementing an ongoing system of measuring, tracking, and reporting accountability and transparency benchmark and metrics. Here's where we're at today. The project definition has been drafted. We've been in discussions with different groups of consultants, and just to give you an idea of the types of organizations that we've started preliminary conversations with, there's management consulting experts such as Boston Consulting Group, KPMG, PwC. There's also accountability and transparency experts such as One World Trust, Transparency International, and then there's also a market research expert, Lieberman Research Worldwide, and we're soliciting feedback from these different organizations as to how to structure this effort and how to approach it. So proposed project approach and timeline are in the process of being developed as we're still collecting feedback from these various organizations. As far as the timeline, phase one, we expect to evaluate proposed approaches by the end of July, engage consultant by the end of August, for the consultant to conduct data gathering throughout the month of September. Then the consultant would propose a peer group framework and implementation approach by the end of October so that we can have engagement with community and discussions during the next meeting, ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires in November, and issue a plan in January of 2014. Then subsequent phases that we're envisioning after this work has been completed is assigning ongoing responsibility for tracking and measuring within the ICANN organization and implementing any systems that we would need in order to measure and report on an ongoing basis, as well as kick off an educational effort to make sure that community members as well as internal to ICANN understand all the measures and benchmarks, and this would be done to institutionalize this effort throughout ICANN and its community. After that, phase three, which is a little further down the line, would include a process of testing, learning, and refining. We would be asking questions: is ICANN maintaining an adequate level of accountability and transparency and making improvements where needed? In other words, is the system of metrics and benchmarks that have been implemented helping us answer this question? And what impact is this effort having on ICANN's viability and legitimacy? And then, of course, based on that, we would assess and improve metrics and benchmarks if needed to see if we're measuring the right outcomes and if they're helping us make decisions. Any questions at this point?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for this, and fully appreciate the approach and the thought given into the process of bringing on board the expertise. A couple of questions that spring to mind for me are, well, mostly arising out of the timing. Two things that this review team has to accomplish is, one, provide an assessment of the implementation of recommendations of prior review teams, and metrics plays a role in that. Two, we need to make recommendations that, as we've discussed at prior meetings, are implementable. And working with staff in a dialogue and board in a dialogue, making sure that the next set of recommendations we give are implementable. And as part of implementability, there has to be a measurement or metric aspect where appropriate. So those are two things that we need to accomplish on our time frame. Given this time frame, I see a potential disconnect in the review team being able to work with the consultant and the staff and the board to accomplish those two very important tasks. So I see a problem with timing. Other comments?
Based on this is Larry Strickling. Based on the discussions you've had with that set of consultants that you listed up there, what have you identified so far as some key metrics for further evaluation? Can you give us any sense of the substance that's coming out of this?
Yeah, and so part of what the initial engagement with the consultant will be is to look at the sort of body of work that we have thus far, what we're actually tracking, and what has come out of the ATRT1 report in particular, issues that have been raised by the community, the metrics and tracking that we're doing right now, as well as their research with other international organizations, best practices internationally.
Right. So what are some of these based on what you've learned so far?
Specifics, yeah, because we're getting a lot of, we're still collecting. Yeah, so we've had quite broad-ranging, discussions with these entities. And so typical ones such as financial disclosure, rules, methodologies for collecting and responding to public comments. It really runs the gamut, addressing both board governance practices, a whole range of issues. And so we're in the early stages, and one of the elements that we want the consultant to come back to is with their knowledge of best practices and potential benchmarking with international organizations, and then looking at all the work that ICANN has done to date, including the affirmation of commitments, responsibilities, and the ATRT1 work. We want the consultant to provide an initial proposal of what they feel would be the best and most useful sort of discrete set of metrics. And we can give you more, sort of a more exhaustive list that we've had initial discussions on, if you think that would be helpful.
And what groups have they identified as in your peer group in terms of comparisons for best practices?
Yeah, we have to pay them for that. So, yeah, unfortunately.
And when did this project start, and what was the... What led to this project coming together at this particular point in time?
Yeah, so this is something that's been in the works since last fall, and with the new president, getting up to speed on this area, he, along with Steve Crocker's and the board's interest in advancing our metrics and benchmarking. We started doing research and seeking consultants with this type of expertise. So it was in the late fall last year.
Other questions? Carlos.
Yes, Carlos, for the record. I have one worry and positive expectation. On the one hand, I hope we don't get stuck like the Bergman report on that there are different definitions of accountability and there are different definitions of transparency, so I hope they jump into a very practical approach. and the practical approach, I hope it's very focused on the different chapters of 9.1, which is very specific very specific relationships, board GAC relationships, board community, and not just standard practices in the private sector, which means publishing it and waiting for the shareholders meeting to see if they show up or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. And we're going to, I'll make a comment, then we'll close this down. We have Tarek Kamel on the phone for our next presentation, but I want to come back to this timeline later today or tomorrow. I see real problems with ATRT2 being able to deliver both a full assessment of implementation of prior review team's recommendations, full and informed assessment, and on the other hand, to deliver well-formed recommendations that factor in measurement metrics, implementability, as we've discussed. So I'd like to come back to this a little bit later today or tomorrow, but thank you for the presentation. Tarek, are you on the call? Can you hear us?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good afternoon, everybody. How are you? And I'm participating remotely. I apologize, but I couldn't come for some personal reasons.
No worries. Very, very good to speak with you today. This is Brian Cute. We welcome your
Hi,
discussion.
Brian.
And how are you?
Yeah, things are fine. And I look forward to the discussion. How much time do we have? 45 minutes, I understand.
We have 45 minutes. Looking forward to your presentation, and obviously we'll want to discuss as well the letter to governments that you've been assisting with ATRT2 getting out the door, the practicalities of that exercise as well. Looking forward to that, but please proceed.
Okay, that's fine. Then I will start to give an overview about what we are doing within the engagement team and within our government engagement, and as such within the last 12 months. The main focus of what we are doing is empowering ICANN within the global internet governance debate, and as well trying as much as we can to operationalize the role of governments as it has been obvious within the talks of the WTPF and at other locations. As such, we are working on a 3-year strategy that we have prepared, and we are sure that we are complementing other initiatives. We are not starting from scratch, and we are partnering with governments as and with IGOs, but other stakeholders also when it comes to the implementation. But let me, after such an introduction, try to frame where the main issue is. And I was reading the paper that Jürgen had had prepared, and I received it. I think the source of the problem is multifolded, and the first issue is related to that new technology architectures really requires new governance models. And many governments did not yet tackle that or understand that completely, that the old model that they were used to go to the council at the ITU and to do global governance and international coordination for the telecommunication issues, that this is simply not any more possible just because of technical reasons and technical architecture reasons. The internet has been, as you all know, I'm not going to repeat that in such a fora, is completely based on a completely different architecture. So trying to fit the model that they feel that they were within their comfort zone for many years, and they were there and they had the say and they were dominant as government and their voices were heard, and it's based on territorial jurisdiction and territorial sovereignty and one country, one vote, that this is over with the technical architecture of internet that is based on peering, that is based on root servers, that is based on a global DNS system and has nothing to do with the telecommunication architecture system, whether in the fixed lines or even in the GSM. So that's one of the main sources that we need to make sure that the awareness and this message is really clear, that this is not a conspiracy theory. This is because the technical architecture and the evolution of the internet requires different governance models. not because of anything else. So that's the first source of issues that we are, or problem, if we frame the issues that we are, in my opinion, facing when we talk to government, specifically in the developing country. But the other main issue that we have also discovered in our talks, when we asked many people, why aren't you actively participating in the GAC? It's there, it's a strong forum, and it's evolving, and there are many observers, 124, I understand now, Heather can correct me, members, and 28 observers, and the number of active participation definitely is less than that. And the simple answer we get is that they say, yes, we sent our representative to the GAC, but we saw once and twice and three times. And it's not only the financial barrier, but the content that is being discussed there, mainly related to the DNS system, and specifically the G business, the GTLD business as such, does not reflect our interests within our parts of the world. We don't have this industry in our part of the world, which is different than the telecommunication industry or the GSM industry. The number of accredited registrars that exists in Africa are still a handful, and in Latin America it's not much better. And this has been, as Jürgen has mentioned in his paper, also reflected in the number of applications within the joint application support program, the JAS, as well as in the new GTLD. So this shows that there is a deeper problem than just participation in GAC, that they see that the substance, most of the substance that is being discussed there, does not reflect their interest, or they are not included. Their industry is not there. Their businesses are not represented. So whom should they go really and talk on behalf? Fine, there is a component of CCTLD that definitely relates to each country, but I understand that the CCTLD part is much more stable now, and the other part is relating to addressing, and I think ICANN has solved that in a very elegant way by the five players, global regional players, the AFRINIC and the ARIN and the APNIC and the RIPE NCC and LACNIC. So the major component that is being discussed in the GAC, sometimes related to the new GTLD industry and to the GTG industry in general, they didn't find themselves that they are part of that, or that relates to them. This has started to change, and with the discussion of the new GTLD program, and we have started to see within the last couple of months, when GAC really became more active in providing advice and in getting into details in protection of the IGOs and in GAC advice related to sensitive strings like .islam and .halal and .patagonia and that suddenly new players are asking, what's going on there? Why aren't we there? We should participate. Why haven't we been there? They didn't blame themselves that they have missed the deadline sometimes to apply as such, but they started to show interest and they started to screen. I'm giving a simple example. That just yesterday, the Organization of Islamic Conference sent a letter to, or I saw it yesterday, they sent a letter to Heather that they want to join an observer as such. They are headquartered in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia has never been active in GAC and has never been active in this community. But simply because of the .islam, and they came in Beijing and we met them in Beijing, they started to say, oh, okay, in the GAC there might be some business for us. There might be discussions for something that is of interest to us, that represent our interests, where we have a duty to do. So I'm focusing on this part because I want to say it is not only to lower the barrier of participation in GAC from a financial point of view or from a material or translation point of view. All this is fine, and the team there is already doing a great job. But there is a deeper problem that we need to work at, that the issues that are there and being discussed, the industry is not really with the right level of strength, and this is where we need to work, and this is where we need to worry, because this needs the bigger work, not necessarily only from the GAC, but from the whole ICANN community, so that we feel that the industry is there, is not left behind, as such. So I wanted to describe very clearly these two, in my opinion, sources of problem of engagement for the governments within within ICANN, the governments and the IGOs. But I see that there is a progress with the dialogue that's happening within the last couple of months related to the GAC advices and the new GTLD program. They started to see that the ICANN board is taking things serious, the GAC advice, and responding. And we see there a positive response than before. Our strategic objectives, while we are moving forward, is relevant to IGOs achieving mutual recognitions of roles and responsibilities as such, and with governments, improving government participation and interaction within ICANN model. And let me get back to the first strategic objective related to the IGOs. It was very important to establish a strong dialogue with the IGOs based on mutual recognition with UNESCO and with the UNCTAD, with the UN, and even with the ITU. And that's what Fadi and Steve Crocker have started with, the courageous step of attending the WICCID and then attending of the WTPF. The issue, it really reflected that ICANN is committed to build bridges and is committed to talk. It's not isolating itself. It's not the devil. It's not something that is hiding in the U.S. and doesn't want to interact with the rest of the community. Yes, there are differences in opinion, and it will continue to be differences in opinion, but we are building bridges. And it was important that the Secretary General spoke several times that he does not intend to challenge ICANN in its responsibilities in relation to managing the critical internet resources as such, and there is a reciprocal recognition as such. This is not only important for the couple of hundreds employees for the ITUs, it's much more important for their constituencies, for their member states, because when many governments, specifically from the developing countries, see this dialogue on the high level between the chairman of ICANN and the president from one side and the secretary general from another side, whether at WICCID or more importantly confirmed at the WTPF, they also get encouraged to engage with ICANN because this makes their lives easier. In the past, it meant that if you talk to ICANN, don't talk to ITU or vice versa, or you have to hide away. So this gave them really encouragement to talk to ICANN and to engage to ICANN and to start to show interest in ICANN, because we are building bridges and opening definitely for mutual recognition on both sides. The role of governments in the overall IG model as such, and which is the second component, is not only a problem of ICANN and within ICANN, it's a global problem. And it has been reflected clearly at the WTPF with the seventh opinion from the Brazilians that did not get consensus, but it triggered a lot of debate as such, and we will continue to live with that within the next 2 years in the plenipotentiary while we are moving forward of the ITU and in the enhanced cooperation CSTD and in the WSIS plus 10 follow-up and the UN General Assembly in 2015. Because governments did not yet find, not only at ICANN, but generally within the global IG debate, a meaningful role where they can participate, but not with a dominant role, and they can participate within the existing platform. They go to the IGF, but they think the IGF is not providing any recommendation. It's just a platform for debate. They go to the ITU, but find the ITU that they are not in charge. The problem with ICANN, I have already described. There are other issues where they don't want, specifically from the developing world, whom to address and whom to talk to, related to security, related to privacy, related to many issues, not necessarily DNS security, but cyber security at large. So we will live with this, continue to live with this debate of what is the meaningful role of government within the global IG debate, and we need to be very alert and very active as such. What concerns ICANN, but also what concerns the overall IG ecosystem as such, because we don't want it to go into wrong directions. As such, we want to defend the multi-stakeholder model and really show that it is working, but it needs to be more inclusive, and it needs to be more considering for the interest from the developing world. We'll continue also to make sure that they secure acceptance of the ICANN of the ICANN model, because it's new to them as such, and will encourage them to consider as governments to adopt the multi-stakeholder model at a national level. There are many good examples like Kenya, like Brazil, and other examples where they really, even on the national level and on managing their own CCTLDs, they are really acting, starting to act in a multi-stakeholder model, and they have participation from the private sector and from the civil society. Again, to stress the idea, fine, a meaningful role for government, but not dominant. Government need to start to realize that they are not alone in this sphere. There are other players, and they should really cooperate well. It's not easy, as I said, but we should continue to stress. And we don't compromise on our principle, one global internet as, with its security and stability and interoperability and open standards in a multi-stakeholder form. I will go within the next 5 to 10 minutes very quickly on what we are doing on the national level, on the regional level, on the global level to address these issues. On the national level, we are looking at a list of governments now that have we have identified internally. We haven't announced that publicly. That we want to focus our engagement with very clearly, because we think either they are swing states or they are influential within within the regions, and as such, and it can be different level of engagements. For example, it can be a project, a common project that ICANN can be doing with the government and brings us closer to their needs and brings us closer to the dialogue. I'm just giving an example with India. We have reached, and Steve knows that we have reached an agreement now with the government of India that we will do together a DNS Regional Security Institute. They felt that this gives them regional leverage. It leverages the know-how that is there in the ICT business in India, and they think that really ICANN is contributing to that, and they are starting to benefit out of that. It took us around 9 months of negotiations, and finally it will be signed and announced in October. This is an example of things that are being done with some governments in order to make sure that we really, together in cooperation with the community, working closely with them and giving them some regional leverage, so they started to get close to what we want, and they start really a serious dialogue, and they start really to be supportive to what we need. With other governments, we are responding to their capacity building requirements, because it's clear in many governments they just need capacity building requirements, not necessarily for the government employees or for the GAC employees, but for their communities as such, and we have many examples in Africa. So that's the way to approach them, and that's the way to engage them, because this is really the difficulty that they are facing now as such. If we give them financial assistance to attend the GAC, that's good, and send their GAC representative. But if he doesn't have an industry to represent and doesn't have a community really to represent, he feels himself partially marginalized. So we need to work on the capacity building and the empowerment of the capacity building on a local level with them. It's a long path, but it is really addressing the roots of the problem to a great extent. And it's not only the role of government, but it's the role of different stakeholders to help us while we are doing that, and therefore we are talking to the global DNS players to help us in doing that, and to handheld really new registrars from the community. This week, today, and tomorrow, there is an African DNS forum. I understand Steve has opened it this morning, if I'm not mistaken, together with ISOC and African TLD, that is addressing these problems and bringing the accredited registrars in Africa together and empowering new startups and bringing global players to talk to them, to transfer know-how, to transfer best practices, to address their problems, how to incubate them, how to help them, because this will really push us forward. And again, this is not only a government engagement issue, but it's a responsibility of the global stakeholder community, and it addresses the problem at its roots. On a regional level, I think you had heard about our regional activities, regional strategies, Africa and the Middle East and Latin America and Asia will be following. And this week it will be illustrated between the Africa DNS Forum, but as well on Monday there is an African panel. And on Wednesday as well, it will be illustrated what has been achieved within the African strategies that has been announced last year in Toronto and is being implemented. And again, to address the development issues that really these people have expressed their need during the development of these strategies in a bottom up forum, and this happened also in Latin America and happened in the Middle East. We heard the messages loud and clear. So the approach is legitimacy via inclusivity. We include them, and the more we include them, the more the multi-stakeholder model becomes legitimate, and that's part of our internationalization strategy. And I think if you are interested in the details of the regional strategies, there is a session on Wednesday dedicated for the African strategy, the Latin American strategy, and the Middle East strategies. How far did we get? On a global level, as I have said, we have opened the bridges with the rest of the IGOs. We're becoming very active in the dialogue. ICANN is not hiding away from its responsibility and from the dialogue. We coordinate with the ISOC and the RIRs and the other, and W3C and the other technical community. With the IGF, for example, ICANN is becoming one of the biggest supporters for the IGF because we wanted to live and continue beyond 2015. On a global level and on a regional level, not only financially, but also from a substance point of view. And we are happy that the IGF now has new 6 or 7 sub-themes, and government role and enhanced cooperation are 2 of the 8 new sub-themes now as such. So the IGF got rid of the old 6 or 7 classical sub-themes that it used to have over the last 6 years, and starting now in Bali, it has new sub-themes that are reflecting also regional. So again, we are empowering the IGF very strongly. With UNESCO, we have our partnership and empowering it in IDNs, but with the CSTD, we are participating in the discussion of the enhanced cooperation very strong, because enhanced cooperation is not only government, but it is also different stakeholders, and we want to reflect that while we are moving forward. We are also addressing for the first time the country missions in Geneva and in New York, on attaché level and even soon on ambassadors level, via events that we do specifically for them. Because we realize that very often these are the people that vote within the international forum, not the GAC representative that is sitting in the Ministry of Telecommunication or Science and Technology or Economy, but they are foreign affairs people that are getting more and more there. I was recently visiting Germany, and I met a high official at the German foreign ministry, and he told me for the first time, even in Germany now, the whole IG debate is coming on the radar of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And the Minister of Foreign Affairs there in Germany had instructed that it becomes really an important issue, and the UN missions of Germany in New York and in Geneva become involved. So we see new players coming in the debate, so we also need to keep the dialogue with them. As such, in addition to the ministries of economy and to the ministries of science and technology and telecommunication, because these are the people that sometimes compromise even on some of the dialogue. Support me in environment, and I will support you in IG, in internet governance, as a compromise, irrespective of the substance itself. So the more we educate them, the more they see the benefits of the multi-stakeholder model, the more this is safer while we move forward in the different fora and in the UN General Assembly and in the revisions that are expected to be there. So we hope to see, definitely we coordinate that with the GAC, we hope to see more qualitative change of participation in the GAC, and we hope to see better understanding and support from individual governments to the multi-stakeholder model on a national and global level. And we are looking for concrete projects with specific governments as far as we kind of gave the example of India, but we have other examples as well, in order to bring them in and make them part of our ecosystem. So I will stop here if you allow me, and I hope that we can have a dialogue and questions and comments if you wish. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tarek, for sharing the strategic approach and tactical approach to the effort that you have underway. As we had discussed, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team has its own particular mandate and scope of work. Within that, at the outset of our work, there was a clear recognition that our work doesn't take place in a vacuum, a clear noting by the group that we were undertaking our work on the heels of the wicket, and a concern on some level of the attitudes that had been observed by some governments during wicket. The letter, outreach letter, was born of that discussion. We appreciate very much your assistance on that and would like to talk a bit about the mechanics of that and how we can get that out as broad-based as possible to high government officials. But putting that to the side for the moment, I'd like to open the table to any questions or discussion for Tarek from the members of the review team. Any questions or thoughts or observations? Carlos.
Yes, good afternoon, Tarek. This is Carlos Gutierrez.
Hi, Carlos.
Hi. Thank you very much for your excellent comments, and particularly the clear segmentation you are making on what government means. Sometimes here we think that governments is equal to GAC, and I really praise your focus on defining the different levels, that sometimes in GAC we have representatives from the economics or the science and technology ministries only, and when you go to Geneva you face foreign ministries and ambassadors who are the ones who make the deals and decisions. And I think that this really should influence our analysis here, and when we talk about GAC, to have the right expectations on GAC, and it's very important that independently of GAC's more down-to-earth work, the ICANN continues to develop its overall global policy. Just one specific comment. When you did the analysis of the lack of industry players in those countries, and going back to a conversation I had with Olivier last night, that brings us to the point that if these countries don't have these industry players, almost automatically they have some bottlenecks for the development yes. of the internet. And as we have seen, even very rich and very important countries like Mexico or even Australia, discussing this morning, are facing heavy bottlenecks for the development of the internet, and we should not stop there, but think where is ICANN roles in helping analyze those bottlenecks and helping bringing ideas how to solve them. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for saying that, Carlos. I mean, ICANN will, and that's clear instructions by the board, and that we will not get out of our mandate. We are working within the technical qualifiers that we are expected to do. So we will not solve all the problems of internet as such. We're not working in broadband, connectivity and access in these things. But when I say industry, I mean the DNS industry as such. And the number of accredited registrars and the number of registrants there. This is where what we really need to address, and really need to involve them, and really need to work together with them and handheld them, so that they feel that they are doing progress and becoming part of it. And the global industry here has a responsibility. And they also need to realize, the big players, that if they need to defend the multi-stakeholder model that they have benefited from for years, then they need also to realize that there is a global political threat, and they need to help developing really business and markets in the developing country. And it's not for charity, but it's a win-win on a long term.
Thank you, Tarek. Other comments? More questions? Olivier.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. Hello, Tarek. Thank you very much for this very comprehensive review of what you're doing and what the ICANN leadership is doing with regards to governments. I have a couple of questions to ask you. The first one is one which I think we often ask ourselves when dealing with governments, and that's how, and you've alluded to dealing with governments, but how do you ensure that you're dealing with a government and not with a specific government department or a specific government official? We have seen in WCIT that often it comes down to the person you're speaking to and might not be the overall view of their own government, depending. So do you engage in a multi-pronged approach with your approach with governments, or do you resort to specific individuals? And then I'll have a few more questions after.
Yeah, thank you for raising that. And it is a fact, and I mentioned even Germany, and so even in the developed world, but more in the developing world, that the national internet governance debate on a national level internally is in transition. We have all realized that with the evolution that happened in the internet in the last couple of years, even on a national level. In the past, fine, it was an activity that only relates to the Ministry of Telecommunication or Economy or Technology. Now, internally, within different governments, they started to realize, wow, the thing is bigger than we thought, and it has geopolitical impacts, it has security impacts, it has economic impacts, it has cultural impacts, and. So there is definitely a very heated debate that is happening on a national level. This doesn't make our lives easier, as such as I can, because we started to realize that we need to broaden our engagement, unfortunately, as such. In governments, and that's not a lot, where they have a council that is taking care of the internet governance issues on a national level, this is easy. Then we have one body to talk to as such, but that's more the exception than the norm. But we continue then to talk to the foreign affairs people, because as I said, we realize that they have a role that we can neglect, and they are mainly misinformed. As such, we continue to engage with the technology ministries and that are active within our GAC, and we continue also to talk to academia and to talk to other stakeholders to guide us on a national level who are really the players. And recently even parliaments started to become active. We have seen in Brazil recently several hearings from the Brazilian Senate to internet governance debate. This did not exist just 6 months ago, and they invite our representative to be there and to work. I'm saying that ICANN will not be able to handle all this alone. We need to work with ISOC as well, and that's what we are doing, and other players, because the scope is becoming too wide and too big. But yes, the departments of different governments and ministries sometimes very often don't talk to each other, and unfortunately we need to keep bridges with the various players, which causes overhead.
Thank you, Tarek. Olivier, again, you did mention the regulators. Are you dealing with them as well?
Yeah, definitely. We consider that the regulators are part of the technology and world and the ICT world, and many of them are members already in the GAC. So that's in some cases. So this is a place where we already have an engagement. It becomes difficult, as I said, when we need to talk to economy ministries of economy in order to lower the barriers, for example, for accreditation of establishing of companies and startups to have accredited registrars. It's not anymore the regulator, the telecom regulator, that can help you in that. You need the Ministry of Economy, for example, that's an example, and foreign affairs, and but definitely regulators are an important player.
Thank you, Tarek. Any other comments or questions? Tarek, before we conclude, just to follow up on the letter that's been going out, again, thank you to you in terms of providing some assistance and resources in identifying the appropriate high-level government officials to whom we want to direct the letter. I know that the GAC staff is continuing to work with ICANN staff to put together as broad-based a list as possible. Are there any specific thoughts you have? Again, the framing of that letter was born of the discussion that the ATRT process is an important process, both for ICANN in terms of the substance, but also as a reflection of how ICANN conducts its business, and an opportunity to identify this process to high-level government officials, perhaps raise their awareness, perhaps raise their interest in participation where their government may not be. And that, again, was the purpose of the outreach. Any suggestions or thoughts to offer to us in terms of that task?
No, I think the letter is definitely a very good step forward. It's good that it is in full coordination with the GAC representative so that they don't get surprised. And our team as well, the regional vice president within the GSE team, tried to come up with a lot of suggestions for government officials to address and to reach out to. As such, this is important because the governments need to see that within the ICANN model there are checks and balances as such, and this idea also is very important to them, and to see that there is an accountability team that is from the community that is following up, and even governments are representative within this team. The idea that I had discussed with you before, I don't know, I'm just proposing it, that it might be useful then, after we get some responses, to have some visits to some officials that really would come back with interesting responses from the ATRT team, together coordinated with our regional vice president, to disseminate the message and to reach out. So that's something you might want to look at and to think about, because in many cases the face-to-face meeting with seniors helps a lot. Nobody will be able to go everywhere, but if we pick up some important players in some important countries, I think this will be helpful and reflect the right message.
Thank you very much, and I have communicated that suggestion to the team, and in particular the government officials who are participating in the team. Clearly, it would be advantageous to get the letter out to the broadest base as possible. Obviously, it would be very good to get responses back and be able to follow up on them. As I mentioned, the conversation I had with Fadi about this, he felt that this, if it could provide some measure of a benchmark going forward, that would be a benefit of the letter as well. So, wide open to the suggestion of follow-on meetings and hopefully getting some worthwhile responses from the governments. Anything else,
yes.
Olivier?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's Olivier for the transcript. Tarek, what material is ICANN producing that is aimed at governments for them to embrace the ICANN model, to explain the ICANN model? Because I think that there is an understanding, or at least my understanding, is that addressing governments is a different thing than doing the sort of general marketing for ICANN, for internet users, etc. There's a specific language to use, there's a specific way to address the concerns of governments. And I wonder whether you are also looking at producing material that will go further than just speaking to the top government official, but actually go through the whole pyramid of officials and that a government is made up of.
Yeah, thank you for asking this question. And as I have mentioned, I mean, we will not be able to talk to 150 governments with the same level of depth as an ICANN engagement team at the same time. We need to keep the bridges, definitely, but we still need to prioritize and choose. And this is what we are doing internally. We are identifying 4 or 5 governments in each region which we think that they have a major role in the overall debate. They are influential on a regional level. They are swing state. They there is potential there to have a healthy relation and a healthy role in the IG system. And for those, we have a plan that we are going to also share with the GAC chair very soon. As such, as I said, for India, for example, it was clear. Start with ZEMA project, one big project that we are doing together, like the DNS Security Institute on a regional level. This has been presented within their council of National Council of Internet Governance that included all ministers and got the approval as such. And this has started to open for us really a dialogue within. There are other governments where we have capacity building programs really that we are working with on different levels as such and different engagement level. And there are governments that they don't need neither this or nor that, but they need to feel that ICANN is giving them enough attention concerning their role and concerning their responsibilities. As such, some examples from Europe, for example. There are governments, for example, where we have chosen, like Turkey, to give them in an operational role, having a hub operational office there as such, and having Fadi going there and announcing that Turkey has been used and Singapore have been used as our new operational hubs, and this will bring, this really shows, commitment from ICANN and shows confidence and trust in the business environment there. This has changed our relation to Turkey completely, 180 degrees, because they felt that they have got a regional level leverage from an operational point of view as such, in areas like investment and in areas like employment that is of interest to them. So we have specific cases that we can definitely share with you where we are working within our engagement plans, but it differs from one government to the other. In some cases, it's just an intellectual high-level role, like we are doing with Brazil, trying to help us in the South-South dialogue. As such. So these are the examples, but we are happy to share this whenever we have it really in a final form, and show what we are doing in this in this direction. We don't want definitely to publicize this very wide, because we don't want to say that we are working with some governments more than others, because this could definitely also cause sensitivities. But unfortunately, we had to prioritize. We realized that we will not be able to work with the same depth with 150 governments or even 120 at the same time. We simply don't have the capacities.
Thank you, Tarek. And I think with that, we've come to our time. Thank you very much for being here with us. We appreciate your presentation. We are here and engaged, working on the task of the letter, but thinking more broadly than that. As you can see, we appreciate your inputs, and let's keep working together.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, and we'll stay really open and ready for any support that we can give as a team to make the ATRT2 a success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Have a nice
Goodbye.
Day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay. Our next... session
there
is
are only one.
Okay. Our next session is with Amy Stathos for a working lunch. So let's take the next 5 to 10 minutes to grab lunch and come back to the table, and we'll hear a presentation on the whistleblower program and the board reconsideration process, which will be an open session. Thank you.